Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Welcome to Beyond Rent. Change is difficult, but often it's necessary if we want to improve. So to help us learn more about change management, we have Matthew from Better Who joining us today. Matthew, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Thanks, Joe. I'm really happy to be here. It's been fun to get to know you a little bit, and glad to contribute to this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. Like you mentioned, we've ran across each other a few times at different events, and it's always fun to learn from others in the industry and build some friendships and some relationships and turn it into podcast episodes, which is kind of what we did because we started talking about this a while back. But before we jump into the actual topic, I want to make sure that our audience knows a little bit more about you. So go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, my name is Matthew Trigali. I'm the CEO of Better Who. But before that, I owned my property management company for about 15 years. Started off here in Charlotte, North Carolina, went multi-state through some mergers and acquisitions, got to about 1,000 units, and then sold that company last year in 2022. And while I was doing that, I had been ramping up my staffing and consulting business, where we were staffing international remote team members to work for property management companies remotely. And then we do a variety of consulting around strategy and team development as well. And so that's what we do here now at Better Who, have a full team of about 12 folks from all over the world, just helping make the property management industry that much better.
Yeah, thanks for that introduction. You're another one of these people, and there's many of you out there that got started in property management, and you were successful, right? You built up a really good company. You did it for a good amount of time. You've got lots of experience. You really understand the industry, and then you kind of pivot and say, how can I serve the industry? And I really love that idea of understanding the industry so well that you get inspired and motivated to go build something to help others really do what you've already done. So I'm interested to learn more about kind of the whole idea of change management and how property managers really need to embrace this idea to be able to improve their businesses. So let's really kick things off. When you think about change management, what comes to mind? Is there a definition or maybe some phrasing around that to help people understand the topic?
Yeah, I was inspired to think more about this just because there's a lot of chatter going on around quote unquote team buy-in, right? And how much energy should the leadership of a company invest in trying to get the team bought in to whatever change that needs to happen? And so I've been thinking a lot about that. Here's my working definition of kind of team buy-in slash change management. And it's leading all stakeholders through a collaborative process to successfully implement the shared vision, right? And so it's all about that leadership and getting the team, you know, kind of rowing in the right direction towards the change that needs to happen.
And I love the use of the word stakeholders there because you didn't say the owners or the leadership or the directors. Stakeholders is a pretty broad term, and it can, I'd imagine, maybe fluctuate depending on the situation, right? Different people are stakeholders in different situations.
Absolutely. I mean, depending on the change, you may need to get some of your clients on board with the change. You may need to get some of your vendors on board with the change. You may need to get some of your staff. You may need to get some, you may need to get rent manager on board with the change that needs to happen, right? So there's all sorts of stakeholders depending on the situation.
Okay, that's great. So we're thinking about a lot of different people when we think about change and, you know, walking people through the process. But when we think about change, you know, I kind of led with that in the intro that, you know, change is difficult. We all talk about it. We all kind of think about it a whole lot. But we often think about like how it impacts us and maybe why we think it's difficult. Now, when you view it from your perspective, because you're helping lots of people go through change, what are some of the, I guess, primary struggles that you see others having when it comes to change?
Yeah, first sort of a preface to that, which is, you know, part of the reason that I love what I do now is because, like most small businesses, and I happen to be, you know, working in the property management industry, but, you know, most people get into it because they're a good property manager. And, you know, they're a good property manager. That's their craft. And because they're good at it, it naturally grows. And at a certain point, they're no longer a property manager. They're a business owner, right? And they have a staff and a business and finances to manage. But just because you're a good property manager doesn't mean you're automatically a good manager of people or a good financial manager or business owner, right? And so as that shift happens, there's lots of changes that are going to have to happen to position that business owner up for success, right? And so then what I see that people tend to kind of go in one of two camps that don't go well. One is what I kind of call the abdicator, right? And so these are people who kind of abdicate their vision. They abdicate key decision-making. They just think they can sort of hire their way out of their problems. They just think, oh, I'll just hire great people. They'll be the ones that can sort of take this company where it needs to go. And the caveat I have to that is there are a lot of things you should be delegating to your staff. But you can never fully abdicate your ultimate responsibilities as a business owner. And then the second camp where I see a lot of people kind of struggling is the dictatorship model, right? And this is just the my way or the highway, get on board or get out approach, right? And, you know, that does nothing to sort of try to collaborate or really lead your team. It's really just saying, this is what's happening, get on the boat or get off. And again, the caveat here is there is a time and a place where that's necessary to say, and I have been there. There were some big changes that I needed to make, and I tried and tried probably longer than I should have to get my staff on board. And when ultimately many of them couldn't, we did have to part ways with them. So you can get to that place, but it shouldn't be your starting place.
Yeah. And where you started is really interesting. And I have thought about this before with different places that I've worked or different people that I've worked for, this idea of really being passionate about the product or the industry, and then the difference between being passionate about running a business, right? And it really is different. And I think that's a great example. A lot of property managers really grow their business because, like you said, they're really good at the property management side. But at some point, there has to be this shift where they fall in love with operating a business, right? Managing people, all of those different things that go into it. And that's a really hard change for people. So I like how you've broken that down in like two different ways that people could go, right? Where they're giving everything away and just, you know, like you said, hiring yourself out of the problem versus just trying to control. Is there one that you see property managers maybe gravitating more than the other when you kind of look at those two different options?
Oh, that's interesting. I think probably I see the abdication more. I definitely encounter that a lot, you know, where I'll be talking to somebody who seems like they should be the key decision maker, and they'll just go, oh, yeah, but so-and-so on my team just isn't on board with this change, so we're not going to do it, right? Which, again, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there was no leadership that happened to get to that place. It was just the default switch that happened there. So I do tend to see that probably more often than I see the kind of dictatorship model.
Yeah. And I think that does make sense, especially somebody that's gotten really good at one part of the business. They probably recognize that they're not great at other parts of the business. So they hire for that, right? Which makes sense. That's a good decision, but you still need to have your hands in there. You still need to understand what's going on and make sure it's aligning with what your vision is for the business.
Yeah, exactly correct. You know, it's a smart thing to hire the right who, whether it's an outsourced solution or an internal solution, but you still have to lead it. You can't, you know, ultimately put off your ultimate responsibility as the business owner.
Yeah. And when I think about the business, we talked about like that evolution of becoming more of a business operator, owner. You know, I think that there's processes, and then I think that there's staffing. And I'd have to think that somebody that starts with a really small team, they probably get really good at the process part, but maybe not so great at the staffing part because they don't have a large staff, but eventually they will. So is there a big difference in how you view the changes in process and developing that portion versus maybe how they're managing their staff? Again, process versus people.
Ultimately, when it comes to change management, not really. You know, when it comes time to either make a change with the process or make a change with your staff, you're going to typically encounter the same types of problems. That being said, I will say that that business owners, in my mind, tend to fall into kind of one of two camps, either the engineer or the salesperson, right? And so, you know, those folks that are kind of more engineering related, right? They might especially be really good at building out the processes and all of that, but they might struggle with kind of building and managing their team. And those folks that are more of that kind of classic salesperson mentality, you know, they may be good in a lot of ways at managing their team, or at least getting a very likable, good, positive company culture, and then they may struggle more in that kind of process side.
Oh, that's really interesting. I had not thought about kind of the personality of that owner or that property manager kind of dictating kind of what side is more difficult for them. And I can see that, right? Salespeople they're good with talking to people, right? So they can get the right people. They can attract people. They can create energy around the people. But they may fall apart when it comes to processes.
Right.
Well, so let's talk more about the actual change part then. What are some of your tips or your thoughts around how we can better manage change? Because that's really what we want to do.
Yeah, so I kind of break this down into kind of three steps here. And one is change restraint. And then the other is involving your change owners. And then the third is actually the implementation of the change. So let me talk briefly first about change restraint. And that is, you know, Joe, you and I have been to a lot of conferences together. And you probably see this, and maybe you even experience this. You know, I do sometimes, where, you know, these people will go to a conference, for example, and, you know, it's like sucking on a fire hose for a few days. And, you know, if you're paying attention, you're going to walk away with at least 10, if not 100 new ideas, right? And so a lot of business owners, they'll show back up on Monday with their team and they'll be like, okay, guys, this is so exciting. I just learned about these 10 new things. And by the way, I signed up with these 4 new vendors while I was at the conference, and we're going to hit the ground running. We need to do all these things by, you know, the end of this week, right? And your team is just exhausted by that, right? And it's sort of that classic visionary syndrome of just, you know, kind of chasing the shiny nickel and every idea is a great idea. And so you need to have some tools in place to restrain some of the impetus towards the change, right? So if you are listening to this and you are that person that has 10 new ideas every day and they all sound exciting, you know, make sure you have the right person on your team that helps keep that in check, right? Like, okay, those do sound like great ideas, but we got to stay focused for right now. And that leads me to my next point, which is it's every business needs to have what I call a parking lot, right? And this can just be a Google Doc or whatever tool you want to use. But basically all those new ideas you have, they should go in the parking lot. They shouldn't become a distraction from whatever you've already determined as a company are your highest priorities at the moment. Otherwise, you're just going to be constantly shifting priorities. So use the parking lot and then have a rhythm where you're analyzing what's in the parking lot, generally once a quarter, right? And to do some of that quarterly planning to extract the right ideas out of the parking lot. And if you're doing this well, you know, you may have 50 ideas in your parking lot at any given time, but probably only 3 of them need to be implemented at any given time, right? And so you need to have a conversation in a system by which you decide and agree upon as a team which 3 are the right 3 at any given time. And as you're going through that process, you know, you want to be able to propose, you know, anybody in the team to propose the ideas, but then you really want a culture of listening on your team. And this is really important, right? Because if you want a culture of listening, it has to start with the business leader, you know, the business owner and the management on the team. Because what that person wants is they want their team to listen to their ideas. But in order for your team to listen to their ideas, you have to actually listen first, right? So you need to be listening to not only your team's ideas, but also your team's feedback on your ideas and have, you know, really good engagement that happens there. And then at the end of the day, after all that proposal and listening has happened, you need to decide, right? And so this is where the abdicators will struggle, right? They'll get to that step and they'll want other people in the team to decide, but that's why you get paid the big bucks, so to speak, right? It's like, hey, and look, you can't be a people pleaser when it comes time to decide, right? There's going to be differing opinions. Some people will say, no, we should do this idea. Some people will say, no, we should do that idea. And ultimately, you know, it's the leader's time to shine. Okay, I've heard all the input and this is the direction we're going.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about going to conferences and coming back with, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of great ideas, right? And trying too hard to do too many at one time. And the whole idea of listening is interesting. And we think about this on our side that if you want to know what to do, you go ask your customer, you go ask your staff, and they'll tell you what to do, right? Because they understand the pain points in their day to day. They understand what's not working for them. And I've also heard, especially with process, I've heard it's very dangerous to change too much of the process at one time because if it does improve, you don't really know what caused that improvement because too many changes happen. Or if it fails, you don't know which element of the change caused it to fail because there was too many elements to the change. So if you can make smaller changes over time, you at least can recognize what worked, what didn't work, and can iterate on that process. Now, when it comes to that whole like parking lot idea and the quarterly planning, how do you know who to have in the room for those conversations? Because everyone, like you said, everyone had, like, you want to listen to everyone. Everyone has an opinion. But if you're going to make a decision, you at some point have to limit how much input you have.
Yeah, this is a question that I deal with a lot, right? Basically, the question is, who should be on my leadership team? And my rule of thumb is, you know, if your staff size is six or less people, then have them all on the leadership team for now. And once you get to about six people or more, now it's time to have a delineated leadership team. And so, you know, you might only have three or four people on your leadership team. It might get a little bigger, you know, but once you have more than six people in the room, it becomes counterproductive. And so that you need to have kind of a number in mind. In terms of who to decide, one of the things that I say is throw job titles out the window when it comes to this decision, right? Because, you know, more often than not, of course, you're sort of your managers, whoever's managing people, it's kind of natural. They'll probably be on the leadership team. But what you really want, though, are just people that you trust to be good, wise decision makers, you know, people who are going to be good listeners, thoughtful, and just contribute a lot to caring about the direction of the company. And that could be anybody on the team. I mean, it could be your, you know, receptionist. It could be, you know, your leasing specialist. And it could be you have somebody that's a manager that maybe they're just really good at what they do and sort of managing reports and stuff, but they don't necessarily need to be on your leadership team, right? So you really just, I know it's kind of a squishy answer that I'm giving, but you're just looking for good, you know, trusted leaders within the company that can be wise and make good decisions.
No, I really like that answer because it's very subjective, right? And when you kind of look at the situation, you have to, like you said, kind of throw titles out the window and do what's best and just know. Just because somebody has a certain title doesn't mean they need to be involved in the decision making. So I think that's great. So as we look at kind of, so that was number one, that was change restraint, I believe. Number two was involve the change owners. What does that look
like? Yeah, involve the change owners. And you kind of hit it on this a little bit with the last part of your follow-up questions here. One of the first things that I like to say about involving change owners is beware of organizational layers, right? So, because what happens is you know, you start off as you add people in the beginning, you're going to have a very flat hierarchy, right? You're all going to kind of work together and there's no complexity to your org chart. But, you know, once you get to, again, say six or more people, or especially 10 or more people, you're going to start to have some layers within your organizational chart. And the problem that happens then, right, is the people who might be the key decision makers might be kind of removed from the day-to-day operations that are happening in the business. They may no longer understand exactly what the pain points are. How are we solving these problems, right? So, you know, we look at Rent Manager, for example, right? One of the beauties of Rent Manager is how flexible and fluid it can be, right? And so you may be dealing with somebody who it's their job to decide how to set up a Rent Manager. But if that person whose decision is to set up a Rent Manager is not the one actually doing the leasing or doing the maintenance coordination or so on and so forth, then they're going to lose a lot of valuable input and insight that they need to set that tool up for success, right? So you got to watch out for that. And you're going to have to really involve the change owners, as I'm calling them, right? These are the people who own the process or the system, whatever the thing is that you're about to change. There's somebody that kind of oversees that now to some capacity. And those people need to be interviewed. You need to spend time just sort of watching what they do, asking them what they do. And the watching part is really important because a lot of times people will say, oh, I do it this way. But then when you actually sit down and watch them, they don't even realize that they're actually doing it a different way than what they said they do, right? So you have to watch out for that. And then with no judgment, just be curious, right? Like, okay, like, well, why are you doing it that way? And be willing to listen and understand. You may learn a lot of things about, you know, and you may find a lot of rooms for, you know, efficiencies and improvements that can happen there. So basically just involve those change owners, learn a lot about what they do before you go through the practice of actually, you know, even proposing what changes need to happen. You know, you need to get all that information first and then involve the change owner in those proposals. You know, hey, this is kind of what I'm seeing. This is kind of what I'm thinking. Like, what do you think? Do you think that'll work or not work? And again, you're not asking them to make the decision, but you are making them a part of the process to make the decision.
Yeah. And you do hear that a lot when change happens. The people that it impacts their day to day, they will make comments like, oh, they made this change, but they don't even understand this, right? They don't understand what I'm doing or how this works. They just added more work, or they made it more difficult for me to do my job because they didn't understand this element. And what you're saying is, well, leadership had an opportunity to learn and they just skipped that step.
Yeah, exactly right. And not just an opportunity, but a responsibility, right? And so, you know, you can't miss the mark on that.
Yeah, well said, well said. So what's the third element that we should be aware of?
Well, so the third element is actually going through the implementation, right? So you've taken your time, you've held back, and you've decided, all right, we're just going to make these three changes, and then you've involved the change owners, and now it's time to implement. And this is just a lot of kind of patience is what I would say, right? So a lot of sort of testing and breaking and training, right? So again, you're going to implement that change, and again, you're still going to involve the change owners. Okay, great. Here's the change, the way we set it up. I need you to play with it. I need you to test it. I need you to break it. I need you to point out where the change is successful and where it's not hitting the mark, where it may not be achieving the thing we hope that it would achieve, right? Because chances are it's not going to be, right out of the gate. So involve them in that process. You know, once they've kind of agreed and bought in, okay, great, yep, with all of these changes to this thing, this is now going to work and this is going to be beneficial. And now there's going to be some training that needs to happen for whoever needs to be involved. And again, that training should be a lot of shadowing, a lot of like, I'll show you, now you show me, right? And even through the training, continue to be curious and open-minded to other fine-tuning that can still happen. You know, most changes, most anything in life is never static, right? Whatever change you make, there's going to be another update you're going to continue to make to it. So, you know, don't be afraid to continue to do that throughout the whole process. And then the last piece is it's really important to have good feedback loops within your organization, right? And that can look like a lot of different things. It can look like a channel on your Slack account where it's just for feedback. It can look like having the right key performance indicators where you're getting the feedback of what's working, what's not working. It can look like, rhythmic status updates. Okay, once a week when we have this meeting, you're going to give me a status update of whether you're, off track or on track with this certain thing. But you need to have those important feedback loops within your organization to make sure that the changes that you're making are effective.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I really appreciate the part about the test and break. And I have struggled with this part where, and this is process or people driven, you put something in place and you see something not working right, and your instinct is to jump in and just take care of it because you know how it should be done. But actually the right thing to do is to let the process break, right? Mm-hmm. And then fix the process, or let the employee fail, right? Not fail so bad that they don't have a job anymore. But these little failures are teachable moments, right? And if you jump in every time and try to save the day, whether it's process or people, you never actually get better, right? Your business doesn't operate better. You need to let those processes improve and you need to let those people find training opportunities. And that's really, really hard to do, especially I would think for somebody that has started their own business. Like you said, they're scaling, they're adding people, they're going from themselves to 6 people to 10 people, maybe to dozens of people. And we probably have listeners with even larger teams. It's really difficult not to jump in and just kind of be that person that protects the business by micromanaging, honestly.
Totally true. When I show up to do like consulting at somebody's, with somebody's team, there's always comes a step in the consult where I ask, who's the person or multiple people in the room that say, it's just easier to do it myself, right? And there's always, one or multiple people in the room that say that. And I always remind them, I'm like, you're not wrong, right? It is just easier if you do it yourself in the short term, right? But what you're gaining is some short-term pleasure for some long-term pain. Right. But if you can step away from that and let the thing break and let somebody else do it, it's going to be painful in the short term, but there's going to be many long term benefits from that.
Yeah, for sure. And that makes me think when we look at how change works and we think about leadership, that I think is a leadership tactic or leadership style. So how does leadership really impact how like the overall team, the larger team, manages change and kind of deals with change?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, as you just said, I mean, it's just so important. It impacts it in every single way. We've already talked a lot about these things in terms of, you know, the abdication versus the dictatorship versus just what good leadership looks like. And it reminds me of one of my favorite movie quotes from Remember the Titans. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have. Great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun movie. And there's this scene that happens between Gary and Julius, the two kind of, you know, the defensive captain and the other kind of key defensive player. And they're at, you know, kind of football training camp and things aren't going well. The team is kind of imploding. And so Gary, the captain, you know, walks over and he's kind of berating Julius like, hey, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. And Julius is like, nah, man, I'm just going to look out for myself. You know, I don't want to really do the things you're asking me to do. And Gary was like, that's a really poor attitude. And then there's this turning moment quote that happens where Julius looks at him and he says, attitude reflects leadership, captain, right? And the whole movie kind of changes from there where the leader of the defense, Gary, changes everything, right? He kind of, you know, is the one that really makes a big impact on the team. And it was, you know, his leadership that then changed the attitude. So, and that can happen to us as business owners or managers in an organization where you may be really frustrated with somebody's bad attitude on the team, but you always have to start by asking yourself first, like, what have I done to contribute to that? You know, if people don't want to adopt this change, cool, I can be really frustrated with them. Oh, they always complain. Oh, they never want to do anything. Well, guess what? That's normal, right? Nobody's staff ever wants change, ever. Like, it's just not a thing, right? And so it's totally 100% on the leadership to lead the team well through change.
That is so wise. And I really do love that idea. And it's this idea of like ownership too, right? You're not blaming your staff for being resistant. You kind of take ownership and say, what am I going to do? Where's my attitude towards this? What am I doing to help them along and to lead them, right? That truly is leadership, right? You're supposed to be leading these people. And if you are, then their attitude will change, or maybe it won't because your attitude is inappropriate, right? So I think that's kind of the key is they're following your leadership, whether it's good or bad. So hopefully you have good leadership and it turns out well. So, you know, as we kind of come to the end here, I'm wondering if you can give us some examples of how you've seen good change management impact a business, right? Because we talk about this and we talk about how if you do it well, your business will grow, you'll succeed, things like that. But what does that really look like in practice? And you've helped a lot of people. What have you seen?
All right. I'm not going to name names here, okay? But I'll give you my examples without naming names. But yeah, I mean, as I mentioned in the beginning, I mean, one of the main things that we do here at BetterWho is we help property management companies who want to have a remote team member on their team, a global remote team member work for them. And for a lot of people we talk to, maybe they've never done that before, and so this would be a big change for them. Or maybe they dabbled in a little bit and it didn't go really great, and you know, and so they kind of tabled it for a while. But you know, talk to a lot of business owners who you know, they're curious about this, they want to do this, right? And kind of one of three things happens again, going back to our abdication, dictatorship, and leadership, right? So the abdication, we see this a lot, right? Where I'm talking to a business owner and they'll just say, like, oh, I know I need to do this. Yeah, I can see this is going to save me tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 plus per year by making this change. Or I can see, I totally see what you're telling me about how our customer service is going to increase by making this change. But Sally just won't buy in. Sally doesn't want to do it. So I can't do it. And I'm just like, what do you mean? Like, are you allergic to money? Are you allergic to success? You're allergic to like having a better company? You're going to let Sally be the one that gets to decide just because she doesn't like change, or just because, you know, she doesn't like this particular type of change, or because she's threatened by this change, right? So definitely we see that time and time again where companies are just hamstrung and held back because there's this usually one key person. And usually, and I'll tell you what it usually boils down to is Sally has all of this institutional knowledge in her head. She knows how everything works. And the business owner is terribly afraid of the day that Sally quits because they haven't documented their processes. Nobody really knows exactly what Sally does. It's actually a very, very toxic situation, even if Sally is a perfectly nice and pleasant person. And so, you know, there's a lot more we could say about that, but we see that story time and time again. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that have to change in those stories. And then the other one we see is where the dictatorship doesn't work. And so this is where we'll have business owners that come to us and they see the vision right away. They're like, oh, cool. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to have better customer service. I'm going to sign up today. Boom, done. Great. And that's awesome. And then when we start working with them, and now I got to go work with Susie, and Susie's like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, he just told me I'm supposed to talk to you and we're supposed to do this thing, but I don't know how this works. I don't really know, like, what's going on here, right? And so she's lost. She's confused. And she's frustrated, right? Because she's like, man, like, you know, I feel like I should have been more involved kind of throughout this change. And so that doesn't work. And then the really negative part, what can happen is the change is then not effective, because we'll make the change, we'll get the remote team around their team, but Susie never bought in. And Susie's going, yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on here, but like, I'm not going to be a part of this, right? So she just kind of puts her head down and keeps getting her job done. And then the remote team member is set up to fail. And then the whole thing kind of fails for them, right? And you probably see this all the time at Rent Manager, right? Like, cool, we signed up for Rent Manager, but you didn't involve the team in the right way. And then they complain as if Rent Manager is at fault, right? Like, oh, Rent Manager doesn't work for us. Oh, well, yeah, we never got the change owners involved, right? So yeah, we see those stories time and time again. I'm sure you do as well in your own versions. And then, you know, the good leadership is when, you know, the right change owners are involved early on in the decision, and they're bought in, and maybe they're excited, maybe they're not, but they're at least going to trust the process, right? They're at least going to say, I don't see the vision. I'm not excited about this change, but I'm going to be a team player. I'm going to trust the process and see what happens, right? And so that's where kind of good leadership comes into play.
Yeah, and somebody actually that I work with, a really wise thing he has said multiple times recently is, was it a bad idea or was it poorly implemented? You know, and it's that idea, right? And when I think about implemented, I think more of the process. But that's why this conversation has been so good, because it's more than just the process. It's what are you doing before the decision? What are you doing to set yourself up for success? What are you doing with these change owners? How are you involving the overall team? Are they bought into it, right? And we talk about buy-in all the time, and we treat it as almost like we're trying to like convince them. Well, instead of trying to convince them, just involve them. And, right. And I think you'll see a lot of progress there as well. So hopefully people are hearing that idea of what the good leadership looks like, and can take your tips today and put it to good use. So as we come to a close, I want to make sure our listeners know how to continue to learn more. So Matthew, how can our listeners learn more about change management, and how can they get a hold of your team over at BetterWho if they're interested in those remote team members?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to actually be continuing this conversation about change management all through 2024. It's kind of, you know, a subject matter I'm kind of passionate about right now. So I'm actually going to be speaking at various conferences on this topic. The next one is coming up at a LARPM Atlanta one-day conference in January. But, you know, I'll be bringing it some other places as well. Yeah, and then BetterWho is easy to find. You know, just go to BetterWho.com, look up BetterWho on Facebook. I'm easy to find in those places as well, and always happy to connect with folks in the industry.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Matthew. We'll drop some links into our show notes as well if people want to look there, but obviously a quick internet search for BetterWho will definitely locate their team. So thanks again for joining us, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode. And until next time, keep going beyond rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going beyond rent.